You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Revelation. Now here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Revelation, chapters 21 and 22.
Beware of pointing your fingers at other forms of abominable. In other words, make sure you take care of your abominable before you start worrying about somebody else's abominable, okay? The list goes on. Murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers. The Greek word here is pharmakeias, from which we get our word pharmacy. It involves the use of illicit drugs. As are idolaters and all liars. God loves the truth. Why would he want to spend eternity with a habitual liar? No wonder he leaves them out of the kingdom. Everyone on this list, we're told, shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Actually, the residents of the lake of fire sound a lot like the past of some of those people in this room here tonight, doesn't it? How many of us fit into some of those categories? Probably all of us. Realize there will be folks in heaven who lied and did drugs and were homosexuals and acted cowardly and slept around and were abominable in their own way. But those folks in heaven repented, and that's the difference. They repented. They wanted to live differently. Not perfectly, but certainly differently. And they repented, they turned from their sin to follow Jesus. Rather than continue to pursue their own way, their goal was God's ideal. Those who get excluded from heaven and assigned to the lake of fire are the unrepentant. They're the folks who didn't care about God and God's ways and were never willing to change. Verse 9, then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls filled with the seven last plagues came to me and talked with me, saying, come, I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. This is such a spectacular sight. An angel repositions John on a high mountain to give him a panoramic view. The angel speaks of heaven as a beautiful bride. Realize, heaven is a great city. It's a hustling, bustling city. You know, here on earth, we sometimes begrudge city life, don't we? I mean, cities are seen as an incubator for all that's bad in the world. Crime and poverty and congestion and noise and pollution. We romanticize moving out into the more pristine countryside. But apparently, God likes the city. In the end, we'll all live in this city. Cities bring people together. Cities spawn culture and creativity. New ideas bubble up from within the city. There's excitement in the city streets. And this is what heaven will be like, an exciting city. Don't think of heaven as a bank of puffy cumulus clouds. No, for all eternity, we'll live in the hustle and the bustle of a city that never sleeps. You and I weren't created for the isolation of the countryside. God designed us for the city, for the buzz of city life. As we'll see, there are aspects of the New Jerusalem that are more like a garden. Heaven apparently is a city with a lot of green space, but it's a city nonetheless. It's a garden in the midst. There's a garden in the midst of this city. Well, John sees this holy city descending out of heaven. What happens to it after it descends, he doesn't say. And this is what brings questions to our minds. Does it just sit and kind of hover between heaven and earth, this new Jerusalem? Does it become a celestial satellite of the new earth? Does it lock into a parallel orbit with this new earth? Does the new earth even have an orbit? We know this earth doesn't revolve around the sun, for in verse 23 we're told that this city has no sun, that the Lamb is its light. In eternity, everything will revolve around Jesus, not the sun. One of the certainties that we glean from this description is the beauty and the color of the city. Notice verse 11. For her light was like a most precious stone, like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. The city will be like a gemstone. Imagine a huge glimmering diamond floating down out of the heavens. Also, she had a great and high wall with 12 gates and 12 angels at the gates. Like ancient cities, heaven has a wall with gates and foundations. In verse 13, on the gates, there were names written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. I think it's fitting that the 12 gates bear the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. The Hebrews were the gate through which the world entered into God's family. All of God's covenants were first offered to Israel. Verse 14, now the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. At his first coming, Jesus chose 12 apostles. Other apostles came later. There may even be apostles today. You could make a case for that. But the original 12 who walked with Jesus had a special authority. They are in a unique category. And here's proof. Their names will adorn the 12 foundations of the New Jerusalem. One footnote. There are 12 foundations. Thus, there are 12 apostles. Obviously, somebody replaced Judas Iscariot. Was it Matthias? Perhaps it was the Apostle Paul. One day we'll find out. We'll read that foundation. Look at that. I knew it was him all along. Verse 15. And he who taught with me had a gold reed to measure the city, its gates, and its wall. The city is laid out as a square. Its length is as great as its breadth. And he measured the city with the reed, 12,000 furlongs. Its length, breadth, and height are equal. 12,000 furlongs. This is the equivalent of about 1,500 miles. Imagine a city with base dimensions 1,500 square miles. This is a huge city. If the upper right-hand corner was Boston, then the other three corners would land in Miami, Phoenix, and Calgary, Canada. The New Jerusalem will cover 3/4 of the United States, roughly about 2.25 million square miles. The most mind-boggling dimension, though, of the New Jerusalem is the height of the city. It's also 1,500 miles high. Realize that today, the Earth's atmosphere extends only 600 miles. That means if the New Jerusalem sat on the old Earth, it would extend 900 miles into outer space. More of it would be above the atmosphere than below the atmosphere. The size of the Lamb City is a tad smaller than the moon. Imagine, too, a city with three-dimensional living space. This is 3D living. Its inhabitants occupy not only the ground floor or the base, but the entire structure. That would increase the living space to about 3 billion square miles, plenty of room for all the redeemed. We know the city's dimensions. What we don't know is its shape. Some Bible teachers believe that the New Jerusalem is in the shape of a dome, or maybe in the shape of a sphere. Others believe that it's in the shape of a cube. You remember the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle was a cube. It was 15 by 15 by 15 feet high. A more provocative suggestion is that it has a pyramid shape. You know, ancient pyramids were all associated with death and the afterlife, and it could be that the idea of a pyramid was a heavenly memory left over in the mind of fallen man. We don't know what shape the New Jerusalem will be in, but it will be quite large. Verse 17, and then he measured its wall, 144 cubits. Now at 18 inches per cubit, that's 216 feet. He says, according to the measure of a man, that is, of an angel. Now, whether this is 216 feet thick or 216 feet high, it's unclear. The construction of its wall was of jasper. The word means speckled stone. And the city was pure gold, like clear glass. I mean, the gold is so pure, it's transparent. The foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with all kinds of precious stones. And note the colors. I've got a chart for you. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, which is a blue, the third chalcedony or an aqua, the fourth emerald, a bright green, the fifth sardonyx, a brownish red, the sixth sardius, a deep blood red, The seventh chrysolite are greenish yellow. The eighth beryl are yellow. The ninth topaz, a reddish gold. The tenth chrysoprase, which was an apple green. The 11th jacinth, which was a burnt orange. And then the 12th, the amethyst or purple. I believe these stones are the same 12 stones that appear in the breastplate of the high priest. And for all eternity, these stones will remind us of Jesus' priestly ministry, that he stood in our place, that he interceded for us. One thing is sure, this heavenly city will be a kaleidoscope of sparkle and color and glitter. It'll stimulate our senses when we see it. And then verse 21, the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each individual gate was of one pearl. The pearl is the only gem that's not a mineral. It starts out as a little speck of sand in the belly of an oyster. It begins as an irritation. Secretions from the oyster crystallize around the speck of sand, and the process forms a beautiful pearl. And this makes it fitting that the entryway into the New Jerusalem are pearls. For it's through the sufferings of Jesus that God has made a way for us to be forgiven. And it's through life's irritations that God matures our faith. How fitting it is that the gates of the New Jerusalem are pearls. For all eternity, each time we pass through the pearly gates, we'll be thankful to God for the irritations and for the sufferings. And we're told that the street and the street of the city. Notice it's not streets plural, it's street singular. For unlike other cities, there's not a maze of arteries in the New Jerusalem. No spaghetti junction in the New Jerusalem. You see, there's only one way to God, and there's only one street in the New Jerusalem. And John tells us that it's made of pure gold like transparent glass, apparently a supernatural mineral that we don't even know about yet. On earth, gold is highly valued, but in heaven, they use it as asphalt. Imagine what they call treasure in heaven. And then verse 22, but I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. And this is so odd. For in the former Jerusalem, the Jewish temple was the city's chief attraction. It towered over the city's skyline. I mean, the temple was the one place on earth where you were sure to meet God. You worshiped, you offered sacrifices, you took your vows, you celebrated the feast days, you performed rituals, all in the Jewish temple. It was the epitome of religion. And this is exactly why it no longer exists in the New Jerusalem, for God will be done with religion. The temple's absence means that God has put an end to religion. God tolerated Jewish religion for a time to teach us certain lessons, but people focused on the law rather than on love. They got fixated on the rules rather than the ruler. God desires a love relationship with his people, not religious obligation. This is why there's no temple in the New Jerusalem. In the end, all that will really matter is the Lord and the Lamb. And then verse 23 tells us, the city had no need of the sun or of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God illuminated it. The Lamb is its light. The radiance, the brilliance of Jesus will give off a light and a warmth, all that we need. And the nations of those who are saved shall walk in its light, and the kings of the earth shall bring their glory and honor into it. And it'll all get laid at Jesus' feet. Its gates shall not be shut at all by day. There shall be no night there. You know, nighttime and darkness are also symbols for sin. You know, it's much rarer for a crime to be committed in the daylight than it is in the dark. Why? For evil loves the cover of darkness. But neither night nor dark exist in the New Jerusalem. And this is good news for kids. No bedtime anymore. You'll never have to go to bed. Apparently, we'll have bodies that won't require sleep. And then verse 26, and they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it, but there shall be by no means enter it anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie. I mean, this eternal city will remain unsoiled by sin, All its citizens will have been there, done that. They'll be done with sin no more. The New Jerusalem will be inhabited by only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And so, is your name written in the Lamb's Book of Life? I hope it is. In Revelation 22, John takes us through the gates of this city. Inside the walls, and guess what we find? We find a garden. A garden. Think of these first few verses as a virtual tour of heaven. Verse 1. And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. There's a river, there's a throne, there's a street, and there's a tree. Like all cities, heaven has a main street. But in heaven, Main Street is its only street. Here John takes us cruising down the main drag of the New Jerusalem. Picture a street of gold that leads to the throne. The street is wide. And rather than a center line or a median or turn lanes, there's a river running down the center of this street. Several years ago, I spoke at a church in San Antonio, Texas. And the church put Kathy and I up at the Riverwalk. There's a river that runs through the downtown section of the city. And there's a sidewalk on either side of the river. Trust me, heaven's going to be a lot nicer than San Antonio, Texas, okay? But it does give you kind of the idea. Main Street in heaven will be like a river walk. You know, throughout the Bible, God is seen as a river flowing through our lives. Psalm 1 says that the blessed man is like a tree planted by the river. In Psalm 46, God is the river that makes glad the city of God. In John 7, Jesus said, from a believer's heart will spring rivers of living water. I'm sure in heaven we'll drink from this river of life. We'll walk along its banks. Jesus will be to us a river, a source of pure and clean and endless refreshment and health. And understand where this river of life originates. It flows out from the throne of God and of the Lamb. You know, from outside, walking into heaven, we've gone past the wall, we've gone through the gate, we've walked down the street, we've walked by the river. But from the inside of heaven, looking outward, everything begins at the throne of the Lamb. For all eternity, we'll be reminded that all that's good flows to us. Not from us, but flows to us from God. It flows to us from the Lamb. This is how where all goodness originates. Not in us, but from God to us. And on either side of this river of life, John sees a tree. Now, perhaps it's one tree that grows on both banks of the river and the water runs through the tree trunk. The original language could indicate multiple trees. Maybe it's a row of trees growing on either bank. We're not sure. But Main Street in heaven affords us a welcome sight. You remember Adam and Eve were booted from the Garden of Eden because God barred them from the tree of life. He even dispatched an angel armed to guard the tree. Now in heaven, mankind is given access to that tree again, the tree of life. You see, if the first couple had eaten of the tree of life in their fallen state, they would have lived forever in sin. But now that we're in heaven, now that we've been fully redeemed, we're given access again to the tree of life. It's restored. Once again, we can come and we can munch its fruits. You remember when Jesus referred to heaven, he called it a paradise. He told the thief on the cross, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." That word paradise is a Persian word. It referred to an oriental oasis, a lush, beautiful, exotic, protected garden. This is why when you think of heaven, you should think of Hawaii or Fiji or Tahiti. The human story should be titled From Paradise Lost to Paradise Regained. The original garden was the Eden. It was called Eden, which means delights. This was God's original intention for us, eternal delight. But this too is our ultimate destination. For we are returning to that paradise, to that garden with the river of life running through it. And then notice a couple of other details here from verses 1 and 2. Notice this tree of life bears 12 fruits. One tree yields 12 fruits, bananas and apples and mangoes, 12 different fruits. Apparently there's incredible variety in heaven and very few limitations. Heaven will be unbridled creativity. Notice too, each tree yielding its fruit every month. Now is this one tree producing 12 fruits? Or one tree yielding a different fruit each month? Or is it 12 different trees yielding their fruit? Again, we're not real sure. But notice here something that fascinates me. Notice the inclusion of time. Each tree yielding its fruit every month. Here's a mention of months. This is a lunar measurement in eternity. In Revelation chapter 21, verse 23, we just read that there's no moon, yet there's months. You see, even in eternity, we won't completely escape time. Today, time rules our lives. We're all on the clock, aren't we? We have deadlines. We have limited time. But in heaven, there'll be time. We just won't be a slave to time. In heaven, we won't waste time or run out of time. There'll be plenty of time always. It's said of heaven, we'll live with time, but we'll no longer be under its pressure. And notice in heaven, we'll eat. I like this. I mean, why else is there fruit? Surely we'll, if we want to eat, we'll be able to eat the fruit. Now, there's no hunger in heaven, but we don't always eat out of hunger, do we? We eat for enjoyment. We eat for fellowship. We eat for relaxation. And if you want to eat in heaven, well, rest assured you can. You can eat all you want. I'm sure angels' food cake is on the menu. What's heaven without angel food cake? As well as divinity. That would work in heaven. What about seventh heaven bars? That'll probably be there. Now, if you like devil's food cake, you better get all that you want right now. I'll bet you, though, every entree in heaven on heaven's menu is calorie free. I'll bet. Imagine all you can eat all of the time and you won't gain an inch. That's heaven. And I'm not being flippant here. Our text gives us reasons to believe that everything in heaven is Weight Watchers approved. Notice, the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. It's not that they cure sickness, for there's no illness in heaven. The word healing can also mean health producing or health promoting. Thus, all the fruits, all the foods in heaven are health foods. And then verse 3 answers the question often asked, what will we do in heaven? And here's where misinformation abounds. People think all we'll do is take harp lessons or rake clouds or spend 24/7 singing. Pastor Sandy, I don't like to sing. Don't worry. Notice verse 3. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. Did you know you're going to work in heaven? There's going to be work in heaven. You and I are going to serve the Lord in heaven. Mankind was created by God for meaningful service. Whenever you complete a task and walk away with the satisfaction of a job well done, realize that's a gift from God to you. It's how he made you, and it's a foretaste of one of the joys we'll experience in heaven.
Are we in the last days? Will Jesus return soon? Will Jesus return before, in the middle, or after the Bible's depiction of the Great Tribulation? These are only a few of the questions Pastor Sandy will address as he teaches through the very last book of the Bible, Revelation. This has been another edition of Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. He's the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, we're sure that today's message in Revelation has blessed and encouraged you in your walk with Jesus Christ. Maybe you'd like to review this message again, or perhaps a family member or friend has come to mind today. Log on to sandyadams.org and click on the radio program option in the main menu. There you'll find today's message. All you need to do is remember today's date and log on to sandyadams.org. Or you can give us a call here at the church. Our phone number is 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. Someone is standing by to take your order. Again, just mention today's date and we'll send you the full-length CD. In the next edition, Pastor Sandy will continue taking us verse by verse through the book of Revelation. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, we want to say thank you for tuning in and may God bless you.